Shea, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, Trina Ndura, and Andre Lewis. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco on Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Journalist Chris Hedges and award-winning cartoonist Joe Sacco wrote the best-selling book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, together. Their talk includes a discussion about sacrifice zones, areas in America that have been offered up for exploitation in the name of profit, progress, and technological advancement. Again, that's Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco, Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to Bread and Roses, Friday, May 26th at 6 p.m. Devin Febriello and Kat Meow Garcia talk about the upcoming Real Voices Summer Camp for female and non-binary youth.
We need to work toward producing and creating films and television from maybe some other vantage points.
I was slowly learning how to deconstruct these images and reconstruct them in a way that represented me and my feelings and my stories.
We'll also hear from Kai Tillman about navigating the film industry as a trans person and a new workshop he's piloting for women-identified and trans people.
The idea of the workshop is to create an environment that's safe, that people can feel comfortable asking questions.
And featuring surprise guest Miso.
Hello, podcast.
Bread and Roses, May 26th, 6 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland 90.7.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought, tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning, good morning. You are listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland. I am Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning, we have a wonderfully celebratory show, and that is a show that we really look forward to every year, talking about the Village Building Convergence. That is an event in this area, and every year right around this time. It's been going on for 17 years, and that is super exciting. So we have with us to talk about the 17th annual Village Building Convergence. We welcome back Priti Shah and Aridi De Cruz, who are co-directors and amazing community organizers for this event. And you have really just amazing backgrounds in community building and in permaculture, in natural building, in all manner of things. So I'm excited that you are able to come back and join us this morning on Positively Revolting.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning. It's like, you know, I have these bios and I was looking through them. I'm like, well, that would take half the show to just discuss the amazing experiences that you two bring. But just a few highlights. Reedy, I'm going to start with you because I love the phrase an intercontinental cross-pollinator. Which was, I think that's an amazing line. Grassroots sustainability organizer. And you have come to Portland in 2010, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to, what drew you to Portland, first of all?
Well, I would say I met maybe five people in India in different ways and in really special places, like specific biomes or doing particular activist work. And that's not where I tended to typically find American tourists. And when I'd asked them, I instantly felt some kind of uncanny resonance with them. So I would ask them, where are you from? And they would say, Oregon. And I'd be like, Oregon, what? Do you have big trees there? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, you know, I can tell. Cool. And I kind of bookmarked that. And as I was trying to find my pathway and trying to find like-minded and like-hearted people, the draw or the pathway towards Portland just grew kind of stronger in terms of Portland State University having natural buildings right in the middle of their campus and City Repair Project. I found out about it in India. Just all these little things. I was like, wait, they have an urban growth boundary? Oh, that would have helped in my city when, you know, we were having our IT boom. Just all of these different things about envisioning what it means to live in concert with the earth. Like those examples and experiments were emanating to me from Portland. So,
yeah. Wonderful. And Priti, you are community-focused eco-activist. Again, yes. love these titles. But you have worked on farms. You have a background in environmental chemistry, and a really just amazingly diverse skills that you're bringing together in this way of, well, now you're also working with City Repair.
Yes.
And here you are after working in Hawaii, in India, in Costa Rica. And here you are.
Here
as well,
yeah.
Working with City Repair. And again, what drew you to City Repair? What drew you to Portland? What drew you to this particular work that you've been doing now for a while?
Yeah, about 3.5 years, yeah. Officially, unofficially, probably for 4 years or so right,
right?
Now. Right, yeah. I also heard about City Repair when I wasn't living in Oregon. I was doing a lot of, I had a lot of rural experience working in India, working in Hawaii, in Costa Rica, and I was living in Hawaii on this farm that might have been hippie-ish, but also had a really strong food justice and agroforestry background. Like, we were trying to reforest this one part of native forest in Hawaii. And I also met a few different travelers that were coming through from Portland, Oregon, or just from Oregon and Washington states in general. And I heard a lot, and I was kind of searching to get back to urban. I kind of felt like at 25, I couldn't just live in paradise for the rest of my life. I couldn't. Now
okay,
I'm crazy.
Okay, I don't see yeah. the point to that, but go ahead.
Right, yeah, now I'm like, what am I doing? The biggest question I get is why did you leave Hawaii? That's
right.
But yeah, I was still really active at that point, and still am at this point, and really wanted to get back into urban activism. And so when I heard that there was an organization doing this type of urban land repair, I was super intrigued. You know, most of my experience and projects were on land repair coming from like 50 acres or more, you know, or working in like rural areas for villages and communities, and not from like this this tiny, whatever, 1/8 acre of an urban lot. And so I was really excited that there was an organization doing that. And so when I moved to Oregon, I actually moved here for a master's program. And then I was like, well, City Repair could be like a side gig. And then City Repair became my main gig.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about, so Village Building Convergence, we mentioned it's the 17th year.
17.
But it's possible that maybe somebody is new to town. Mm-hmm. In fact, maybe thousands of somebodies are new to town. And maybe they don't know what City Repair and the Village Building Convergence brings to this area every, starting right around June 1st.
Yep.
You mentioned, I think I mentioned placemaking.
Right.
Let's start with that. What is placemaking?
Well, placemaking is basically turning any sort of dead space and adding a story to it, turning it into a place. And where we are at, there's always been a place associated with every little square foot and all over, you know, the city here. Like, there's a story there. There used to be possibly a home. There was a family at one point. And, you know, where we are at the stage of development, there's just a lot of dead kind of space that's been concreted over and no longer has a story that's there anymore. You know, it doesn't have any sort of gathering use. It's really only used for one thing, which is cars, you know.
It's a big game in Portland now. We go, what was that?
Exactly.
You see something new going up and go, what was that before?
And you try to remember.
And I've been like, here for, over 35 years. Wow. Ani, way longer than that.
I was born here.
Yeah. And it bothers me that I can't remember.
Right.
What was there?
Yeah.
Because the face of Portland is changing.
Right.
In an alarmingly.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, sterile. I call those Mussolini architecture things that are going up. But a lot of people don't remember who Mussolini was. So
that's a whole other topic. But losing a sense of identity, and what, you know, Portland had distinct neighborhoods and distinct communities, and now I think what Lynn is talking about is sort of this homogenization.
Yeah, and it's happening all over America, and you know, in some ways, maybe Portland is a little bit late to the game because of this urban growth boundary and because of some of the other code things that we have in the city. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's fine, like, we're humans, you know, we're going to evolve and things are going to move on, and so places are going to have different stories. But what we're finding is that we're losing gathering space. You know, we're losing spaces for people to come together, to celebrate each other, to meet each other for free. We're not talking about at a mall or at something that you pay
for
to get
into. The mall seemed to be in a decline, which I'm very happy about.
So, you know, and that's what we're trying to offer, is really trying to find places, nodes, if you will, within each neighborhood that people can come to gather, kids can play, and neighbors can talk to each other. And maybe it sounds idyllic, but really at this point, talking to your neighbor is goddamn revolutionary.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that thing is, that always surprises me, that we are alienated to the point,
you know,
that talking to our neighbors is a revolutionary act, and getting to actually form bonds of community in the places that we find ourselves living, as opposed to, I've got community and it's scattered around the world and it's this community of thought. And that's also very cool and it's very wonderful.
Right.
But to actually know the people we live next to every day of our lives is very challenging at this point.
Yeah, definitely. And it can invoke a lot of fear. You know, what we found in this trend of getting people being afraid about the people next to them, of, I don't want them to know everything, or, you know, and it's kind of sad, you know.
And they change so often. The person next to you changes.
And that's where it comes from. You know, we're lacking that rootedness. We're lacking a reason to stay. And, you know, we're offering that if you invest in your community and where you are and get to know the people you are, you're more inclined to stay.
Do you have anything to add, Rudy?
You're nodding your head, so we thought we'd just do radio and have you verbalize.
Well, I was thinking about how placemaking is a way for us to kind of enmesh and sync up our inner and outer landscapes, you know, as a sense of identity and a sense of belonging and a sense of place. You know, we may think that we externally or phenotypically or whatever it is, like those barriers, and oh, they live in those boxes, those Mussolini architecture, oh, they live in those like weird hobbity kind of earthen structures, whatever we're projecting on other people based on our fear and separation. The idea, I think, of placemaking is that we can somehow come together and co-create a shared sense of identity by having a shared sense of place. And so, you know, when these intersection paintings are designed, for example, it's like weaving together different symbols and sacred, like, you know, maybe sacred memories even of people who have passed on or whatever it is, like, and it's that knitting together of a common story that really like helps transcend some of the barriers we see otherwise.
Right on. And before we start talking to the listeners that are calling in, and you can call in at 503-231-8187, I just wanted to have you maybe list a few of the examples. If folks are new to town and they've seen these wonderfully painted intersections, they're like, what's up with that? Why do people do that in Portland? The probably one of the most well-known is the Sunnyside Piazza, which is, gosh, on Yamhill and 33rd. I know that I was fortunate, before I moved from my last place, worked on an intersection with my neighbors on Southeast Alder Street, sort of close to KBOO. And there are these wonderful examples around town. Can you name a couple of others?
Oh, there are a lot.
Lots now, yeah.
I will say Sherrod Square, the original, down in Selwood. I think the one on 16th and Alder that you're talking about will be repainted.
Nice.
So there's a smattering of them all over Portland. Preeti.
We have the first ever international cookie tree mural going up in St. John's.
Nice.
This is a community that's at the very, very tip top of St. John's, up right by Pier Park, between the Sittenden Elementary or George schools. And it is a cookie tree mural that's going up on June 3rd, all designed by the kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because we should say that it is City Repair just doesn't come in and go, okay, we're doing this. It's a completely community-based, which is what Vridi is talking about right. People talking together. The community decides what's going up.
We do about an 8-month or so community engagement process. So some folks will come to us and be like, hey, I heard about this. And some places we've been lucky enough to create partnerships with other organizations working in the area or through grants or other city connections where we get keyed into an area. And that's what happened up in St. John's. We got a grant to do some work up there. And we've done about 8 months of where we go to the community and kind of tell them who we are and ask them what they'd like to see.
That is awesome. Yeah. That's the neighborhood I grew up in, near Pier Park. All right, so 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Deanna, you are on the air.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Wonderful,
good morning.
Interesting conversation. I have a question about story, in which I was very interested to hear that you talk about stories that come from before, perhaps, the people who are currently living there are there. Is that right?
Sure. Ideally, yes.
Okay. So the question is about how far back do you go? And do you ever consider the people who undoubtedly lived for thousands of years in these areas? And I'll just take my response off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Thanks, Deanna. Yeah. That is beautiful. Thank you for presencing that. I would say that in some cases, the story goes back further enough to include the original inhabitants of this area. That's one aspect of our work that I think we acknowledge that there needs to be a lot more work on, the diversity, equity, and inclusion in general, and partnerships with the Native American community. And so Indigenous placemaking, for example, like storytelling about not just this, I would say, extractive tendency to kind of cherry pick the traditional ecological knowledge, but really like there's a fine line over there that is premised on deep relationship building, because not all stories are for us to to even ask for, you know? And so what I think we are engaged in and need to do a lot more of is to continue to work with urban Native community leaders and even the tribes and see how Indigenous placemaking can be like, you know, strengthened and bolstered a lot more than just a couple of art pieces at like, you know, a few public service areas and Telecom Bridge and let's like do that. But really, how do we like create pathways for that story to come through?
Sort of a weaving together as opposed to, as you were saying, extractive or tokenizing. The culture vulturing as opposed to actually developing that deepened relationship and having ideas come together in that way.
And so far I'll give you a few examples, and this is really, I'm particularly like invested in doing this, so it speaks to my heart a lot and I want more. But in the past we've done, you know, our small community building efforts have been to invite leaders from the community to come and to cultural humility panels and talk about the topics, and we've done placemaking at Native American Youth and Family Center, NAYA, things like that. But again, like I said, a lot more can be happening.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And so the other thing that was striking me as we were initially talking about placemaking is, you know, with so much, with what's happening with housing in Portland and what's happened with development in Portland over the 17 years that VBC has been happening, certainly Portland's face has changed a lot. And communities that have been in neighborhoods for generations have been disrupted and moved out of those communities and really dispersed. There's not a new gathering spot, you know, especially for African Americans who've been very hard hit with the gentrification of North and Northeast Portland. So, again, as we look at telling the stories of what's been here, how do we also look at honoring the pain that has been created with gentrification in Portland? How's that?
It's a good question.
Should I take a step? Yeah. Well, so here's something, and you know, as we're talking about these topics, I must say this is like future visioning, and it's kind of like where our eyes are set on that next horizon for ourselves. So far, I would say a lot of attention is funneled into the creation, like the actual like painting of the street. And I think a little less, and there's a lot of community building that happens in that endeavor, but a lot less attention is focused on inhabiting the place that you've created to gather. And so something that we're really working on, you know, in fact we got a grant through Oregon Humanities to facilitate just this, is what about bringing discourse and dialogue back out into public space? Because on one hand, we are, you know, the costs of renting a venue space to host a dialogue are going up, and we're, as a small community organization, really pressured by that. So this year we don't even have a central venue, partly because of that. And so then as we were thinking about this, we were like, you know what? A huge portion of how we began with the ephemeral placemaking, where we just pretty much went back to the streets, to public space to be, to feel, to enact our power. I think there's a lot that can happen with that. There's a lot of potent storytelling across fractures and a lot of reclaiming of physical space and then, like, you know, other kinds of spaces, more metaphorical, that can happen by bringing discourse back into the streets. And so that's something we're...
Carry on.
Sorry. I don't, you know, if they don't feel like they can relate to what they see happening, then I think that is not to be shied away from, but rather like that's telling us that there's a mending of a relationship that we can't, like a story that wants to come out, that we can't just like kind of package in a happy, like, oh, and then it's all cool and we had this thing, you know, like that's a deeper connection waiting to be had.
Absolutely. So I want to look at what's happening this year and encourage our listeners to call us at 503- 231 8187. You can also like us on Facebook. You can like our fan page there and carry on the conversation throughout the week, as well as in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Mm-hmm. Lynn, your finger is in the air.
My finger's in the air. So I'm looking at some of the things that you're doing. So permaculture seems like, for people that I have heard you folks called the mud hippies.
Mm. Not a, ooh, I haven't heard that.
I know, not the worst term I've ever heard. But that things to go into neighborhoods that, like, it would be great also some, I was looking at the map, if you could go past, like, out into Gresham should right. be a targeted neighborhood, because that's where a lot of people that used to be in North Portland are. But permaculture seems like something that, because to help people with a garden mm-hmm. has so many, because vegetables are going to go way up in price, because we don't have folks that used to pick them are afraid to go out in the fields and other reasons. That just, so tell me how that's working, because I just think doing some permaculture stuff sounds really interesting, and it, that it would bridge, instead of having just a painting in their mm-hmm. street, this is something so very practical and extremely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. For justice.
Yeah. For, you know, again, permaculture is, we look, it's a design system, just to
yes,
give a little background.
Yes, we should also, thank you.
Yeah, it's a design system where you basically just look at a small plot of land and see how each plot or each part of the land can be utilized to its highest
potential. Because we all, those front
yeah.
yards.
Those
you
front
know,
yards, yeah.
Where all, so the, much good, sun. all yeah. the good sun is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so much sun, so beautiful to have something out there. You know, we love to do gardening or garden-focused projects with any sort of commuting site that that is interested in it. In mm-hmm. fact, that's probably our first pitch, because a lot of times, you know, permaculture is one thing to talk about, and maybe it's a little bit of a fancier term, but I think what we like to talk about is just food justice. This idea of, like, hey, you have the right to grow your own vegetables, and if you think that you don't know how to do it, maybe your neighbor is really good at it. Maybe your neighbor has better sun, and maybe your other neighbor has better good soil, and, you know, like, this
that
idea
is the
like
tradition
coming
of gardening exactly. too, is that neighbors would talk to each other about how they're growing something.
Exactly, how they're growing, share that resource, mm-hmm. you know, to be like, oh, I have an abundance of tomatoes. Well, great, I have abundance of kale, you know. So that idea is really like a simple way. And it can, you know, this year we're doing a couple of different gardening projects that actually are more pollinator and flower and bee focused. Okay. We're planting the bikeable pollinator corridor in the Lloyd Center, where it's those giant kind of hockey puck looking planters on Multnomah? On
yeah, yeah.
Multnomah that are being revived. And last year we did our first installation, and it was sponsored by Green Zebra. Mm-hmm. And this time we're doing it sponsored by Doubletree?
Various partners
there. We're working really heavily with the Lloyd
that
Eco District.
That is a
District.
Famous company. I love that.
You know, it's really through the efforts of the Lloyd Eco District and yeah. through City Repair that we're yeah. getting that. But also something that we're sitting down and talking about, one of our evening events that we're doing for this year's Hearth, is we're having a food justice roundtable in which we're inviting people from the community, from Northeast Portland, mostly of color, to tell their stories of what it's like to work either as a gardener, as a community organizer, as a immigrant restaurateur here in Portland, Oregon, and actually hear their stories and create some dialogue around that. So it is very, permaculture, food justice is very embedded into this community building project. Again, City Repair, we don't have a say or a preference in what type of project the community decides to do. We're just here to, like, offer the menu, the menu of resources available.
And facilitate that experience
exactly.
in a lot of ways by, yeah. You know, you have some experience in facilitating these dialogues,
exactly.
in, well, even letting people know, oh, you're envisioning this. This is the nuts and bolts that
right.
that vision is going to need.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so this year's Village Building Convergence starts on June 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you said that there is no central place mm-hmm. for the gathering site, as most years there have been, like, mm-hmm. a hub that mm-hmm. people can gather in every night. What is happening this year? How are people connecting up for those dialogues and other celebrations?
Yeah, good question. Well, it's fun because, let me also just plug, to find out any information, any questions, any ideas, any thoughts that you may have about the Village Building Convergence, you're going to go to www.villagebuildingconvergence.com, and there's a calendar of our events, a map of everywhere that we're doing our projects, as well as information about our evening program. Mm-hmm. So this year our theme is home, and it's maybe funny or actually really telling that we don't have like a rooted giant paying rent in a venue space home. So what we're offering is we're doing a calendar of events similar to Petalpalooza, in that where we're really trying to pitch different project sites to lead different gathering times. And we are hosting two roundtable discussions with the help of Oregon Humanities. Thanks, Oregon Humanities, to gather people and to have some dialogue. But we are also introducing a lot more like bike-friendly events, and that's going to segue to our biggest excited thing that's coming out for City Repair this year is we are reviving our mobile tea station in the form of a bike trailer. And it's this giant, wonderful bike thing called the Tea Crab. And not only will it be...
I am thrilled about that, by the way.
I'm actually doing a terrible job. I should have really say more about it.
Well, you know, so with the theme of home, and also I want to relatedly plug Ride to Dream 2's move. Trillium was on Facebook Messenger with me saying that they're breaking down the communal tents right now. Oh. So anyway, plug for them. Mm-hmm. Blessings to your move to the Lloyd District, actually. Yes. And the Tea Crab, an electric bike assist tea house, will be debuting, helping move R2-D2 on June 2nd. And part of why we went with the crab theme is because the crab carries its home on its own shoulders. So it's like moving away, you know, the distinction between houselessness and homelessness. Yes. And things like that. Mm-hmm. Like moving away from this, like really exploring what creates a sense of home or what doesn't create a sense of home and of belonging, like what separates. And so, you know, as we've all been remarking and reminiscing, like Portland is undergoing a lot of change and we're trying to adapt. And I think that the Tea Crab and really delving into this topic of housing and housing injustice is helping us like craft new ways to make placemaking accessible and viable. So, you know, you were saying earlier that we should be out in Gresham, and hopefully we will be out in Gresham.
I didn't mean to say should. I thought... explore. It would be good to explore.
Right.
I think should's not a taboo word, and okay. I think we should be in. I'm asserting like we need to be out there, further east where the infrastructure for livability is less, and like even more of the colonial grid has our communities separated from each other. Mm-hmm. And so with things like the Tea Crab, what we're hoping is, you know, with certain like slightly different visual treatment, so that we're not we are muddy hippies, but we're also social justice activists and other kinds of, you know, we got to wear a number of hats to increase our relatability and resonance to a wider section of the population. Mm-hmm. And so the city of Gresham, sorry, Carly, but they are talking to us. And so is Hillsborough and Oak Grove and Oregon City. Like all of these folks are really coming to us and saying, we want your tools and techniques. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping that the Tea Crab and ephemeral placemaking, we call it like this pop-up, you know, where you can go and where there are unused lots. You know, Portland is so densely like packed in. There's so much going on. I think taking these kinds of strategies and going further east will give us a lot of success. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, with fantastical, mythical creatures like crabs and stuff, the kids come in or there's like some kind of, you know, like, I don't know. Oh, look at the shiny object. More than, oh, that looks like...
Not really. Mm. No, that's not what we're going for. Usually but, that's the shiny object. Sort of like, well, with the fascination that people have with the ice cream truck.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of pulled in, yeah. And then either you're like drinking tea and hanging out, or yeah. We're having a conversation about housing justice and injustice. You know, it just depends.
So in the very early days of city repair, that is actually a goodly part of the way that they did the work.
Right. Yep.
And it was a pretty frequent topic that we returned to here on Positively Revolting with Mark Lakeman around the T-Horse, which was initially, it was sort of the announcement of City Repair's work in town, which was a little pickup truck that had awnings and sort of became a butterfly, sort of dragonfly sort of thing. That they would stick in the sides of this wonderful little truck that was brightly painted and roll out some carpets, and they traveled in a circle around the city every specific night of the week. There was like, you know, I think I can't remember what it was. It was like every Monday night they would be in a different park, and they would set up in that particular neighborhood, and they made the spiral around the city over the course of the drier months of Portland. And I will never forget, because I just thought this was such a wonderful anti-alienation, anti-isolation, right? Pro getting people to actually just talk to each other because we're human beings and we live in an urban landscape with each other. That I was so absolutely enchanted. So we talked about this quite a lot. And I will never forget the day that one of our detractors, who was a regular caller in the 90s, called the show and said, you know, the problem here, Ani, we now know you want to force everyone to come together in parks and drink tea together. And I was just like, you nailed it. Yes, you're right. That is exactly. Finally, I feel like you understand me. Yes. And anyway, just
the tea Nazi she's been known as. Just that
you will actually enjoy each other's company and have some tea. I love the evolution of from the tea horse to the tea pony, and there's been many other sort of various configurations to sort of suit the need of the time.
Right.
And I am excited about the tea crab because hey, it's my astrological sign. I say,
ooh, good to know.
There we go. Yeah. I'm a Cancer and I care. Anyway, I want to invite our listeners to call in at 503-231-8187. You are listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning we are talking with Rudy DeCruz and Priti Shah. They are co-organizers for the Village Building Convergence this year, VBC, that is starting on June 2nd. And continuing on through June 11th, yes?
Mm-hmm.
What are some specific things happening this year? We talked a little bit about that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
What are some placemaking efforts, and what are some other gatherings? Let's start with the placemaking efforts. What are you really excited to see coming together this year?
I'm stoked for permaculturalists and mud hippies to help R2D2. I'm going to say that again. Please direct efforts to that. I'm also super stoked for the Kenton Women's Village going up in Kenton neighborhood. Another houseless village. They're doing a couple of work parties. I'm really stoked to have our community interface with unhoused neighbors, to have that break down that barrier between unhoused and housed neighbors. I think it's been bubbling up for a while, and as permaculturalists, like, you know, we get deployed into disaster preparedness and stuff like that, and I'm really seeing this huge potent collaboration point of community resilience being very accessible across the board, and so I'm stoked for Kenton Village, also stoked for a lot of those just the paintings happening all over, and there's a map, and we're more spread out. There's a church in Hillsborough who's doing permaculture gardening. So we're in Hillsborough.
Yeah.
Yay, Community of Christ Church. What else?
I think that there's something like 28 sites this year. 28 sites. 28 placemaking project sites all throughout Portland.
That's huge.
Yep. Starting, and it's fun because we actually are doing, there's something crazy, like 8 painting projects going in the first weekend. So we're praying for sunshine.
Yes. May it be sunny. Yes.
We're praying for sunshine, and we have about 8 intersections or road streets that are being painted the first weekend. I'm definitely really excited about the experience of not only is there a cookie tree mural going up in St. John's, but through our efforts, we got a grant worth working with the Portland Bureau of Transportation, as well as this grant called Kaboom Play Everywhere Challenge, where we got to help create fun walking ways to school that kids can ways for kids to interact with a walking route to school. That way they don't take a more dangerous route.
Right.
And kind of engage like the residential walk pathways even more. And so we're building a few fun puzzle kiosks that are going in, as well as a kiosk that has all these musical instruments, and like a little like toy share, and a area for you to like write wishes to your friends on your way to school or on the way to back to. And
okay, that's so sweet.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Exactly. So we have four or five of those going up, all in like the Pier Park north part of St. John's, between, you know, like North Fessenden area. That's all happening the first 3 weeks of June. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Can I add a couple
more? Yeah, please, go ahead.
Jenny Lees from Try On Life Community Farm, one of our dearest, longest-term partners.
Jenny
was like, hey, can you plug our work parties? There's this massive endeavor that she and others have been working on. So there will be natural building as well, especially the first Saturday, I think. They're putting up this relatively large Stockley building, and maybe there's some Cobb too. And then I also want to plug Angela Goldsmith's Treehouse project happening in St. John's. So still some of those funky, you know, like really grounded kind of structures going up, and then the Houseless Village building as well.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Let's go ahead and talk to Pat. Good morning, Pat. You're on the air.
Hey, it's the not-so-famous payphone, Pat.
Hey, payphone. It's been a while.
It's well, usually I'm a high holiday person only, but being a civil servant for the publicly owned spaces in Portland, I was wondering if there was any partnership with or thoughts of partnership with Portland Parks and Recreation, and I'll listen to you guys off the phone. Thanks.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Portland Parks and Rec, we would love to work with you more and more and more.
Elizabeth Kennedy Wong, we're coming for you.
Anytime. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Excellent. That would be really exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Portland Parks and Rec has been a great supporter with the T-Crab and T-Horse, and giving us a lot of permits to go around to all these parks in different neighborhoods. And so we have worked with them more informally and not in like a physical changing of a space yet. But we've done a lot of different projects in all of our parks. Earth Day, they've always been huge supporters. Anytime we do an Earth Day event out at any park in Portland. So we are big fans, and you know, we'd love to collaborate on a space. From what we understand, it just takes a lot more community building and relationship building, and we're on our way.
Yeah,
right on.
And I would add, like, there's Portland Parks and Recreation. I've been in other rooms where Portland Parks and Recreation has been very proactive working with the urban indigenous community to bring back that placemaking and storytelling of, like, oh, it's not just this pioneer and settler came here and named Forest Park or, like, Balch Creek or whatever it is. So that deeper story of the land that we inhabit is coming alive in parks. And so there's this potent intersection. That's why I was like specifically calling out Elizabeth Kennedy Wong and her good work with the Native American Community Advisory Council. So the pieces are there, and it's just waiting to happen, Pat.
Yeah,
you're making it happen.
Right, yeah.
And let's go ahead and talk to Mary Jane. Good morning, Mary Jane. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, ladies. And yes, I love to hear stories from the elders, all the wisdom. Yeah, wonderful. And thank you for all. You do, all your guests and you, Ani and Lynn, what you do, and all your education, and you're radical. I love. Yes, positively revolting. Mary Jane here. But I live, a KBOO member, of course, and I live in Sweet Home, a pretty conservative little town, and I live in an affordable senior community with probably 24 complexes of duplexes and triplexes, and I've lived here almost 6 years. Well, we have a lovely community garden, so that has brought all of us together. It took me 5 years to get them to stop using pesticides and herbicides. I live
good for you.
Good job. Good job, Mary Jane.
And it was continuous fighting with management and owners. We have a beautiful wetland behind us, so legality-wise, they finally found out, you know, and realized that they weren't supposed to be polluting the stream. And I, if you're aware, which it sounds like all of you are, you see the wildlife from the bees, the birds were gone. Anyway, but I want to get to the community garden. We have a couple of young people from Willamette Housing in Corvallis, and they are just wonderful. They have a grant, so they come over, and I'm still drinking coffee. Not awake yet. And help us with the community garden. It's wonderful, and to have the biodiversity of all the plants. I've always been an herbalist and trying to educate people about how everything is connected.
Thank you. I also volunteer for
the Bluebird Corvallis Audubon. So, yeah, it's just, I love my bluebirds, Western mm-hmm. Bluebird, yes. And the starlings, no. So anybody that has starlings, don't feed corn. It's all GMO anyway. So, okay.
Thanks, Mary Jane.
Go, and I'll be listening.
Thanks for your work, Mary Jane. Keep it up.
Thank you.
I do. Thank you.
That's amazing.
That's good to hear.
It is. Isn't it? Yeah. Let's go ahead and look at what's coming up this morning on KBOO. Besides me losing my voice.
Ani coughing.
Yes.
At
well,
nine, there's, yeah. At 8:44.
That must mean I'm awake and next to the microphone. At 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices. They will be looking at the one-month-long hunger strike by over 1,500 Palestinian political prisoners. At 10 o'clock, Eric Ascadia will be on with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, the Pacific Underground will host a discussion about the role that names play when it comes to identity. Thanks to all KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not yet a KBOO member or not a current member, you can become one today. Just go to our website, kboo.fm, and click on Donate. And so we have, oh gosh, not that much time. I want to make sure people know how to connect with VBC for people that want to get involved, for people that want to help paint intersections, for people that want to help with the houseless projects. There's so much happening again. And how do people keep up with that? How do people connect?
Well, I would... Two things. I would say our website, villagebuildingconvergence.com, and our Facebook page, because there's a lot that we're curating through this event, and we'll do featured posts like, are you interested in natural building? Head to TLC and to Angela Goldsmith's Treehouse. Mm-hmm. Are you interested in Mushroom Vortex? Then head to the close to Markham Hill. Are you interested in Portland and Japan's connection as sister cities and sister cultures? Then head on down to Jean's Farm. Like, you know, there'll be those kinds of those stories coming alive on our Facebook page more than our website.
Yeah. And there's lots of ways for you to get involved. And if, you know, volunteering or coming out and meeting people isn't your thing during the day, we have definitely some things in the evening. It's not as robust as it's been in the past few years, but we're still hosting bike rides, and we're hosting a wonderful art night. Our art show is going to be held on Thursday, June 8th at the Emerson House. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a call to art. So if you are an artist and have some sort of art that you'd like to share, our theme this year is belonging. You know, what gives us a sense of home? And all that information you can find at villagebuildingconvergence.com. We have a couple of evening dinners. Also, if you want to hear anything about City Repair, if you are the first time hearing about this, or if you just like to hear the story again, Mark Lakeman is actually giving a speech, kind of his storytelling of how City Repair started. It's called The Village Lives, and that is Sunday, June 4th. And Mark Lakeman is one of the co-founders of City Repair. It was founded by four activists in 1998, around then. And He travels the country and the world, kind of giving a speaking lecture, if you will, about placemaking, about reclaiming public space, about, you know, badass democracy of taking back the communal gathering space instead of living in a colonial grid. And so that'll be June 4th. And, you know, it's his night. We've kind of given him 2 hours to do whatever he wants. And he's so excited to actually present in Portland. He very rarely actually ever does that. So If you have any inkling of urban repair or, you know, natural building or permaculture, or just want to hear about what we're talking about and still can't really understand what it is, that is a great night to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would quickly add
that. Where is that again?
It's going to be at St. Philip Neri. St. Philip of Neri off of Division and 16th. Mm-hmm. Thank you, St. Philip's. Yeah. That'll be there 6 p.m. Sunday, June 4th.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that that's a life-changing talk that he gives all over internationally as well. And it begins our in-house course where we teach how to do what we do. And it's called the Village Building Design Course. And it's it's put on and co-taught by our whole team. And so if you are wanting to know how to do this in your community or take it to different cities, that's the course for you to attend.
Excellent. There's something that has come up a couple of times, and I realize that there may be listeners that have no idea what you mean by the colonial grid. Oh. And why that's a bad thing. Why right. is it undesirable to live in a colonial grid?
Because it frames land and our experience through the motives and eyes of developers rather than on a human scale and as villagers.
And it's literally in like geographic terms, it is a square versus a circle. And I think if we look back into all of our indigenous pasts, you know, we at one point lived together in circles and were able to kind of have a sharing space. And so what the colonial grid essentially separates us into boxes and doesn't allow us to gather as easily. And it's kind of a way, it's really designed around vehicles and cars. You know, it's not designed around
humans. Developers getting exactly. the most money out of the square inches of the earth.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Thanks, Sonny.
For sure. Well, sometimes it's really easy to fall into the language that we're used to using right. in yeah. these projects. And and it's important to remember that a lot of people, that's a new concept. You mm-hmm. mean, but wait, we just live this way. It's like our houses, we're on a block, we face a street, and what could be the problem with that? So we have, you know, 8-foot fences in our backyards, and we never see each other in any way because we just drive into our garages and then walk into the house. What could be wrong? Aside from the fact that that is very much reinforcing that alienation mm-hmm. and separation, and not having any kind of space in common to exchange the vegetables or mm-hmm. to you know, look for each other's cats or whatever it is. You
it
know?
Only works when you have too many zucchini and you have to secretly put them in a bag on your neighbor's
exactly yeah
on your neighbor's
but that whole
doorstep.
That's dumping zucchini and running yeah you know
it's the only time having that. Alienation works.
Not with the figs. Sometimes exactly. with the figs too. Oh,
people usually
I'll
are.
Bring figs to my
bring
place.
Bring figs to okay. my place.
Ooh. Okay, got it.
Make me jam.
Yeah, pretty.
Well, I also don't want to forget to plug that. Though we are not hosting our own kind of entertainment, kind of kick our shoes off and take off all the mud and dirt on our body sort of night, we have outsourced two really great after parties this year. You know, and so we are partnering with Sold Out, and we have discounted tickets if you come to VBC to go to DJ Premiere, which is happening on June 3rd. The VBC code, discount code, is VBC17. So that is one place that we will be there kind of shaking our booty, as well as on the last Saturday, June 11th. We are partnering with DJ Anjali and the Incredible Kid, who are regulars here.
Amazing DJs around town and at the station.
Yes. They are having...
They're everywhere.
Exactly. They're having their fifth night of Tropital, and we are also... So if you say that you're from VBC, you get $2 off your ticket.
And the one more thing I wanted to add is June 9th, which is, I think, a Friday, is Pitch a Tent, Southwest 4th in Washington. A number of awesome performers will be performing there, like Mike Crenshaw, who's on our trailer. He's yeah. provided the soundtrack. Thank you, Mike. And we'll be camping out with the Tea Crab in solidarity with Right to Survive. So you could... hang out with us there too.
And what's the significance of that night?
Well, it's to protest the differentiation between legalizing camping in the streets for the Rose Parade versus when it's done out of survival for houseless folks. So
it is an incredible differentiation, right?
Yeah.
That that people that don't have another shelter to go to get hassled and moved along, mm-hmm. but people that have a place that they can hang their hat inside are allowed to sleep on the street because they want to get a good spot for a parade.
Divide off their territory right. with duct tape. Yeah.
Wow.
It mind just blowing. Seems, yeah, exactly. Mind blowing.
Yeah.
And so again, that's June 4th, you said?
June 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Right to Survive.
And again, people can get all of this information on your Facebook event page. Is that
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm. Facebook okay. as well as website.
Okay.
Yeah, villagebuildingconvergence.com.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. How do people, if people are listening right now and they're like, damn, this all seems like a good idea. Obviously too late for this year.
Yes.
But how do they take that vision forward? How do they work with that vision if they're being inspired by this conversation?
Yeah, good. It would be great to come out regardless. If you want to do this in your neighborhood, there's chances are there's something happening in your neighborhood anyways, or at least within a mile or so. So it would be a good idea to come out to one of the work parties and see what it looks like. And then we launch our application for projects in the fall. And over the summer, we'll do a few gathering events as well as some info sessions that happen in the fall. And then we invite anybody and everyone that's interested. Mary Jane, if you want to do something more in your senior center, you know, mm-hmm. maybe that's you can apply for a small project and we can see.
And bring it to Sweet Home.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have had spots in Vancouver. You were talking about Hillsboro.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, so you have not restrained yourselves to the Portland city limits by any stretch.
And we don't say no to any projects.
Right. If you are someone that is excited, that wants to do something in your neighborhood, we will help you find a way.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? So we were talking about how that gets into actually talking to your neighbors.
Uh-huh.
And since I had the good fortune of being involved in a couple of these, I understand that, how that does encourage you. But if you could, we just have about 5 minutes left, just give people a little run through of what happens when you propose a project.
When you propose a project, you surrender to the spirit of the village in some ways, you know, because you have no idea what's going to come forward. You're pretty much you're pretty much saying, okay, I'm committing to this process that I don't know where it's going to lead to other than the uncertain like dialogue and growth that I'm embarking on. And so folks, you know, that could mean, like, and we had this, folks, like, go through the entire collaborative process, and then towards the end, one neighbor says, I don't feel comfortable, and then they honor that. So it could even lead to, and we don't consider that a failure, because that means that the dialogue was really rich. And it could also mean that people are decking out their intersections with all kinds of fun stuff, like community composting and trellises and a slew of community kiosks and installations that are now viable and legal through this process in Portland. So, you're committing to the unknown and to getting to know one another is mm-hmm. how I would put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lead. It's this kind of surrender and this idea of like, oh, I want to do something, and then we kind of help shape your idea, but we're really asking you to kind of embody that happy spirit of like being like, yeah, I'm willing to engage with people in my neighborhood. I'm willing to engage with understanding that everyone has pain and different stories and here to listen. And, you know, we're kind of the group, we're kind of like your cheerleaders behind you being like, you can do it. We're all doing it. We're all weird and think it's fine. You know, don't want to accept the reality of what we live in, you know,
yeah.
That's really where we're at, you know, and there's so many ways that you can add a little bit of interaction that is right now legal. And, you know, we're always trying to push those boundaries of getting something else done, or maybe painting some sidewalks, maybe, you know, offering some solar, like something else. Like we're always trying to push that boundary. So any sort of idea isn't seen ludicrous. It's just about sticking with it and keeping up with this idea that this grid that we live in and these streets that we inhabit, that we see every day, and these the houses that we see every day, that we have the power to interact and actually change a little bit of the design so that people feel more comfortable living there. And you know, these projects have all these other benefits besides looking beautiful and adding like something visual. It's really about communities coming together and people sharing resources, you know.
That and beauty, though, go together.
Yeah.
That exactly.
Yep.
Because humans
they don't generally in this
more.
Culture, and it's really good to have them be reintroduced to each other.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Thanks. And again, for people who want to get in touch, it's villagebuildingconvergence.com.
Yes.
And, well, wish you the best and have a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be back.
It's
bringing
really
it home.
Always good to talk to you. All right. Take care. And Jeannie,
speaking of what?
Speaking of rejuvenation and celebrations, Lynn and I will be taking a short break. And Linda Olsen-Osterlin, we thank her very much for filling in for the next 3 weeks or something like it.
Yeah, three weeks.
Okay. And enjoy. Take care.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Tune into KBOO on Sunday, May 28th at 10 p.m. for a live broadcast of Thirsty City. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop night at The Know, and Sunday, May 28th will be a benefit for KBOO. Performers include Libretto, Mike Crenshaw, DJ Wicked, Burial Ground Sound, and many more. Again, that's Thirsty City, hosted by King Tim 33 and a third, Matt Fu, and Northern Draw, Sunday, May 28th, starting at 8 p.m. at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland, and also broadcast live at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Don't worry, I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Dearly beloved,
yes, come ride and dance with Diablo all around Portland as we celebrate Prince's birthday on Wednesday, June 7th at 8 p.m. with a mobile bicycle dance party. We'll be rocking Petapalooza, dropping the Prince jams all night long, frequent dance stops. Once again, that's Prince's birthday celebration on Wednesday, June 7th, 8 p.m. More information on the KBOO website under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, and the time is 9:01. Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 9, One Land Many Voices looks at the month-long hunger strike by over